Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. This week's Great American Read follows the trials and tribulations of some of literature's favorite protagonists. This episode examines how these everyday heroes and anti-heroes find their inner strength, overcome challenges, and rise to the occasion. Episode 4, Heroes of the Great American Read, premieres tonight at 7 p.m. Central on SDPB-TV. That's 6 p.m. Mountain. And keep voting for your favorite books until the winner of America's Most Loved Novel is announced in October. Earlier this month, I met with Patrick Hicks, author and writer in residence at Augustana University. His work, such as the novel The Commandant of Lubezeck, often explores issues of good and evil.
I think what really makes a wonderful book is one that absorbs you. And a really good read is essentially an out-of-body experience. You're being hypnotized by the writer, and you are taken somewhere else, and it's someplace that's outside of you. And you're invited to see the world through the eyes of another human being. And that's a really rare and wonderful thing. So a really good read should make you sort of forget about yourself and your own life for a little bit.
You do that in your writing. And I'm wondering, with when you're writing, do you get the sense, like, I've got it, I'm in that space, I'm out of myself, and readers will be out of themselves too? Do you have the same experience when you're writing as when you're reading in that way?
Yes and no, because when I'm writing, it feels like, when it's going really well, it feels like someone else is giving me the lines. When the writing is going extremely well, I'm hurrying to keep up. It's almost like taking dictation. And that's when I know I'm really on to something. And if I'm surprised while I'm writing, that means the reader will be surprised. So if I'm not, as I'm writing, if I'm not, you know, surprised that a character decides to do one thing as opposed to another, the reader will never have that sense of surprise as well. So I always follow my characters wherever they go. So when the writing is going well, it's really, it's like something else has taken over.
Some of those characters are not people we want to be in their head, necessarily, but it's necessary for us to go there. You've written about Nazis, you've written about people who are suffering, people who are about to die. What is it like to be in that space as a writer and to know that that's an important space to be in as a reader?
I kind of have to measure myself at times, so, and maybe fortify would be the better word there. So when I'm sitting down to write and I know that I have to get into the head of, say, a Nazi commandant who's running, say, a death camp, as was the case in my first novel, The Commandant of Lubezeck, I'm aware that I'll be stepping into this really dark space. And yet I still have to find something that would make that character not just a caricature of a monster. So that's why I have my Nazi commandant. He's a fairly decent dad. He loves his kids. So that was one sort of way that I could get into that character a little bit. And then when it came to the prisoners in my camp, the percentage of prisoners in that camp were Jewish, I had to do an awful lot of background research to sort of allow myself to get into that space as well. But that was really hard to do. And at times, you know, I would finish writing and I would just have to push off from my desk and, you know, take a couple laps around the building and enjoy the sunshine and kind of cleanse myself from the space that I'd just been in.
Talk about place a little bit, because, you know, you're writing about places that you are not necessarily from, although often you do write about places that you're from. You go there and you walk the same ground that some of those people have walked.
Yeah. And I find that essential for my writing and my writing process. Other writers would have a sort of a different sort of feeling about that, especially if they're writing maybe science fiction or fantasy. They don't have the ability to walk around these historical sites the way that I would. But I find it absolutely essential to walk the concentration camps, for example, and to walk the soil of places like Auschwitz. It helps me to frame what these places might have been like. It, of course, is an act of imagination on my part to try to place myself there. You know, I can watch all the documentaries I want. I can interview people that survive these places. I can read books. But at the end of the day, it's a leap of my imagination. And when a reader cracks open my book, it's a leap of their imagination as well to time travel back with me to the 1940s, to a very, very dark place. And hopefully when they finish my book, they'll maybe understand something that they didn't about that particular period of time in a way that they hadn't previously.
You're one of those people, if people ask you where are you from, Patrick, that it's not an easy answer.
No.
So how do you look at that, you know, as a writer when they say, you know, where are you from? What's your hometown? How do you write about place when you are from and have deep roots in multiple, Minnesota to Ireland to everywhere in between?
Yeah, my sense of home is very nebulous and amorphous. It changes. It changes as you talk to me. I grew up in a small little river town in Minnesota, and that's my bedrock. That's my home. That was the first 18 years of my life. But yet, I lived in Europe for 7 years, and I'm an Irish citizen, and I have very strong ties to Northern Ireland because my mother is from Northern Ireland. And now I've been living in South Dakota for almost 20 years. So my understanding of home is it moves around, and what a gift that is, because it means that I feel as if as my writing moves around, I can borrow from these moments of my life and make a bigger story.
Mm. Where do you get recommendations for books to read? How do you figure out what to read next when there are so many choices?
Oh, wow. Yeah, this is the great thing about being both a writer and a professor, because I'm plugged into literature, you know, as soon as I wake up. And I talk to students that give me recommendations, colleagues that give me recommendations. Of course, my friends who are writers, that's a big community, and there's always books to read from my friends. And what a joy that is to get a book and to know a writer as a friend, and then you read their book and you remember, oh my goodness, they're really good. It's like, you know, it's like this surprise because you know them as a person, and then you read the book and you're totally blown away. So I have stacks and stacks of books at home, and it's just a question of trying to prioritize what might come next.
Do you have a favorite literary character? Who are some of the literary characters that stand out to you?
That's a tough question. I mean, there's so many characters that have touched me throughout my life and have resonated with me at different points in my life, and I still return to them and return to those books for sort of sustenance, and it's like revisiting an old friend, and every time I re-enter these books, it's like encountering a person you haven't seen for a long time. But I suppose one character that's been very durable over decades for me now is Leopold Bloom from James Joyce's Ulysses. He is, for me, the most fully developed character in the English language. There is no other character that we know better than Leopold Bloom. And it's just a real joy to step into Ulysses and to see the world of Dublin of 1904 through the eyes of this Jewish, Irish character who is just walking around the city and just living his life. But yet, what a life that is to see Dublin in 1904.
So how old are you when you meet Leopold Bloom for the first time?
Ah, this I love too, because Leopold Bloom is the main character of Ulysses, but the next main character would be Stephen Dedalus, who's in his 20s. And I read Ulysses in my 20s. I was 22 when I read it, which is roughly about the same age as Stephen Dedalus. So when I read Ulysses for the first time, I was really attached to Stephen Dedalus, this 20-something that's really fired up to be a writer, and he's got these grand ideas of what he thinks art should be. But now when I read Ulysses, Leopold Bloom is in his 40s, and he has a wife, and he's a son that has died, so he's a grieving father. And suddenly this book has taken on dimensions that are much different for me now, because it's about a man in his middle age who is reckoning with mortality and what does it mean to be a good citizen, and these questions that are very different from what Stephen Dedalus was really wrestling with.
Let's talk about plot. Books that you cannot put down. Are they plot-driven? Are you a character person? Is it a combination of all those things that the writer needs to deliver all the goods? What makes a great story?
What makes a great story? I do think that it's character, it's plot, it gives the reader something to chew on that they maybe hadn't thought of before. I think the really great books drop us into this moral universe, and as we follow the character, we're sort of consciously and subconsciously measuring how they are reacting to the problems that they're facing with how we might encounter those situations. And maybe that's one reason why we read. I don't think it's just a question of wanting to be entertained. I think it's, we're such social creatures, I think that we want to enter the headspace of someone else and to just see how they approach interacting with the world. And I think a really good book, we close it and we understand the world a little bit differently because we have been allowed the gift of existence in someone else's imagination.
How has your style as a writer been changed by what you, by your life as a reader? Has it been influenced, your reading influences your own style? Or do you try to push away all that reading and come up with a style that's not influenced? Where do you sort of, how do you approach that?
One of the things that all writing instructors tell their students when they're first starting off in college, you know, you have to find your own voice. And that takes a long time to come across. It takes a lot of trial and error. I mean, it sounds like the easiest thing in the world is to find your voice, and then you just sit down and you start to write. But those writers that really stick with us, they have a certain cadence and sensibility, so that if I read David Sedaris or Hemingway or Ishiguro or Pat Barker, she's one of my favorite living novelists, there is a distinct voice that's there. And that only happens through a lot of writing and learning how to speak the words on the page.
Are your characters impacted by people in your own life? And that's a trick question for Patrick Hicks, because some of your characters are, as you said, not a caricature monster, but you know, you've written about a Nazi commandant, and you've gone to different places in your work, but in your poetry certainly is influenced by. But do you find influence for fiction that you write in the real people that you're bumping up against in daily life?
And the answer is yes. In the case of my Holocaust novel, the commandant is based on some real life historical personalities. But in other points of my fiction, like my short story collection, The Collector of Names, there are a number of characters in there that are based on maybe images of myself from the past, where I've just sort of maybe changed the gender, or they're members of my family, where again, maybe I've changed the gender, or maybe there are just sort of quirks that I notice about people that I interact with every day that I think, oh, my character would do that. So to be a writer is, you're a bit of a magpie, really. A magpie has this nest that's collected from all of these other sort of bits of detritus around the world, and you create something out of that. And I often think writers are that way as well. So writers know that when they look at a character, secretly, there are probably several lives that are embedded in that particular character. And if we've done our job well, even the real life person, they would pick the book up and not be able to see themselves in that character. But we can.
Are there places you feel like you have been because you have read about them?
Yeah. I've been to Hogwarts. You know, anyone that's read J.K. Rowling has been to Hogwarts. I mean, it doesn't exist in the physical world, but it exists in imagination. I mean, that is such she's a master at what she does, because to read any of the Harry Potter books is to walk into Hogwarts and to see the floating candles, and you can kind of smell the place. And, she is really, really good at placing us somewhere. And I think that's one of the big moments of magic, and I use that word intentionally with her work. She is a magician. But just not in the sense of what that book implies what magic means.
Can you see the seams of that when you read her work? The rest of us just get caught up in it and roll along with whatever where she wants us to go. Are you reading it and saying, look what she just did, look how she turned, you turned that into a reality?
This is both the blessing and the curse of being a writer, because I cannot pick up a book and just enjoy it. Because if I am really, really hit by a paragraph, I will stop and I will unpack and just try to figure out from a craft perspective, well, how did she or he do this? How did they have this impact on me? So maybe it's a bit like watching, say, a pianist on stage, and I can't play the piano, so if I'm just listening to, I don't know, Chopin or the Beatles, whoever is playing up there, I'm just going to enjoy that. But if you are really good at what you do, I'm positive that there will be some unpacking and wondering, well, how did they, I don't even know the terminology for it. But if you're watching a magician on stage, most people are going to be watching the trick, but other magicians are going to be wondering, well, what's backstage? How did they do that? And that's one of the great things about being a writer, is I have these sort of two levels of reading.
As a father, what do you think are some of the essential books that you want to share with your son?
Wow. I love how chewy and big that question is. And because my son has been adopted from Korea, I want him to know not just the Western stories. I want him to know the stories of his own culture. You know, Korea is a culture that's existed for 5,000 years. I want him to know the fables and myths of his home. I also want him to know the Odyssey, you know, the story, which is almost 3,000 years old, and it still resonates with us and will always resonate with us for as long as people are able to read, because Homer has done something which transcends time. You know, he's plugged into the human condition. So I think the stories that I'd really like my son to know are those stories which are timeless. And that's sort of a fuzzy term, but there are books out there that will transcend the place that they came from.